My original abstract talked about working with an area that did not have optimal urban planning and transportation set up. After I submitted my proposal, they got it. So the idea of looking at a community and saying, well, this is why this is this way, environmentally this is why this is why, I kind of reframed it in saying, how can we, as researchers, policymakers, planning professionals in my other field, how can we take photography and use it to really create a thicker description of urban environments? So this is how visual cues in the built urban environment influence health-related behaviors. I don't have any relationships to disclose, but I'm married, so. Just a few acknowledgments. Obviously, the Community Health Planning and Policy section, the Community of Seminole Heights in Tampa, Florida, the APHA Community Health Planning and Policy Section grant, and University of South Florida College of Public Health Student Honorary Award for Research and Practice Award. So, with urban planning and public health, there are mutual properties and goals. So they have an undeniable relationship. And then this relationship between environment and population health explains a lot of disparities among urban, suburban, and rural populations. Just a few things from WHO. Characteristics of a healthy city, access by the people to a wide variety of experiences and resources with the chance for a wide variety of contact, interaction, and communication. And then the Principles for Developing a Healthy Cities Project, a city health plan should address the creation of supportive physical and social environments. This includes issues of ecology and sustainability, as well as social networks, transportation, housing, and other environmental concerns. So as much as health interventions are conducted, the complexity of urban infrastructure is rarely taken into account. We usually talk about food security in an isolated way, for example. Additionally, successful and sustainable projects in both urban planning and public health must effectively promote public involvement. And in transportation planning especially, public involvement is a federal and state requirement. And also a very nice way of doing it in public health with needs assessments, triangulating data. This requires communication strategies in layman's terms for bidirectional participatory research. So why photography and planning and health? I think one of the biggest things is populations with low literacy, limited English proficiency, and certain developmental disabilities can use pictures for addressing, monitoring, and evaluating community needs. Planners and other professionals can incorporate representative graphics and can use discussions to contextualize during public hearings and meetings, and also help develop policy. For example, the Philadelphia Planning Agency engages communities of varying socioeconomic statuses by hosting meetings in which they assess photographs, create maps, and utilize other non-technical methods. So when we're talking about photography of the urban environment, we really need to talk about the framework. And so my interest is really teaching planners and public health professionals what to look for in just getting baseline data, using photography as a really exciting and very generalizable method for supplementing their data. So for social spatial analysis, these are the kinds of things that are pretty common, really standard urban planning things that also have a lot of relationship to health. So for health professionals and planners to dialogue with the community, these are the standard planning dimensions to frame a photo shoot. So when you're going out, we're not just going to take pictures of, here's a street. What does a street show? What can public health professionals and researchers glean from looking at a streetscape? So this list shows basic indicators. And usually they're measured more or less as an absence or a presence of, for example, high commercial vacancy reflects a lack of commercial prosperity. Low lighting or lack of lighting indicates an issue with surveillance. So I decided to use probably the lowest income area of Tampa, which consists of Tampa Heights, Southeast Seminole Heights, and VM Ybor. And I chose this area not just because of the low income of most of the residents, 40% poverty. Most of them are 40% of the area lives in poverty. But they share a newly constructed multimodal corridor. So you can see this red line coming up. The communities lie between A and B. This is one of the Hillsborough County transit maps. So even in that little two-block area, there are 14,350 people, give or take. The per capita income is between around 9,000 to 12,000. And 53% of the households are single parent, married without children, or non-family households of two or more people. And that was included because of the sociological concept and tradition of these are the characteristics of households which influence the magnitude of participation in placemaking. Not to say that it's determined by, but it's influenced. So I used the sociospatial analysis and framework to cross with photos. So here are the methods. So I went out to the community, and I, as an urban planner and public health researcher, I photographed components relating to the sociospatial indicators of modern planning. I conducted a content analysis on photographs using multidisciplinary concepts, sociology, urban health, urban planning. And then I decided to take all of this and make recommendations for future research in planning and health. So I broke these up into about four operationalized themes. So one is signage. A lot of the signs around the areas were service-based signage. So this bench in front of a popular gas station is one of many that dot the streets. And in Florida, of course, because we're a party state, you can buy alcohol anywhere. So this is kind of like a pregnant woman never drinks alone, placed right in front of a place that does sell alcohol, cigarettes, and things like that. I also found that transit stops provide areas of congregation and lingering. Billboards were prevalent, especially for health insurance, car injury attorneys, and other health-related concerns. These signs at another transit stop tell a different story. These signs reactively address a panicked population. Powerful images indicating arrest, unplanned pregnancy, and other traumatic events are seen by people who use the stop, creating a level of stress. An alternative would be to push to advertise preventive measures such as birth control or resource centers. This is a very Jane Jacobs, icon of urban planning, eyes on the street as a necessary indicator of safety and community cohesion. A variety of businesses with varying hours keeps an eye on street activity, not only for residents to congregate during tasks such as laundry, but for business to be well lit to discourage unwanted activity. So we have laundromats that are open 24 hours a day, the corner stores that are open 24 hours a day, and also other things that are well lit that discourage crime. Conversely, vacant properties or commercial strips which only operate during a set amount of time encourage undesirable activity. So there are many vacant storefronts on this strip. This is a former diner, and it was one of only three places in a five block area offering seating. Which leads us into the next, which is on the go. Aside from obvious food choices, and this area had about two full-service groceries, very walkable, access to transit. So I didn't really want to focus on the stigma or stereotype of this is an inner city and so we have no, there's food insecurity in terms of, food deserts, because that's not how it is. But this larger picture presents businesses which press on the go. Fast food eateries, gas stations, convenience stores, auto mechanic stations encourage residents to be rushed. So there's really no third place in that, like a coffee shop, even like being able to dine in a place, being able to sit, relax, things like that. There's very few places to linger. And it seems as if parking lots and transit stops are almost the third places of congregation. This is another picture of just, we have the Checkers, the transit stop, there's a food mart behind there, and across the street there were some vacant properties. So transit-oriented development, or TOD, is being touted as the savior for retrofitting suburban areas. However, all it means is creating accessible, safe, and economically sound transportation and land use decision making. This stop is around a beauty salon, dry cleaner, dollar store, and grocery store. There are stops every half mile on this road, and most have an immediate cluster. So there's destinations to go, whether it be childcare, other gas stations, connection sites. So this was after the road construction, which encourages the pedestrian, bicycling, multimodal options. And this creates obviously safer and healthier streets. There are explicit directions on pedestrian walkways, as you can see in the upper left picture, but they're only in English. But they encourage safe walking. There are bike lanes, bus lanes, and pedestrian crosswalks, which are clearly marked so that both the person operating the single occupancy vehicle and the bicyclist walker can interact safely. Most sidewalks are designed with textured pavers so that those needing scooters or wheelchairs can safely maneuver, thereby encouraging autonomy. So here are some findings. What's interesting, and my biggest about this, is that the planning projects, they don't have to incorporate health objectives, which is a real shame, because how interesting would it be to say, let's do some self-rated health. You know, how do you use the street? How did you use the street? How do you use it now? But do it in a real time series way to make it more accurate. Also found this is a very stress-inducing environment from the things that I mentioned before, the signage, the on-the-go, there's no place to relax. Transit-oriented development has different forms. We're in urban planning, we're all talking about new urbanism, you know, putting that crate and barrel so you can just walk right to your car. But not all every community is like that, but every community should have the ability to have those benefits. Transit stations and parking lots act as third spaces for residents, which is interesting because I would love to see maybe maps in the transit stations and the stops that have locations of maybe testing services, Planned Parenthood, grocery stores, things that, you know, necessities that's just easier to navigate. Also great for social marketing. Handicap accessible pedestrian crosswalks and connected streets along the corridor. Great. I liked it. That was just mine. And then businesses with 24-hour access, although we see them as, oh, well, we don't want that open all day, it actually can act as crime preventers. Lessons learned. Again, the planning project did not incorporate health objectives, which I mentioned. It's difficult to comprehensively assess population health because you don't have those health objectives, because you're not, you know, working collaboratively. You really don't know what's happening. The crime rate went down considerably from 2005 to this year since the inception of the new roadway, but that had a lot to do also with a new Tampa Police comprehensive, you know, crime stop and plan. Also, neighborhood boundaries do not indicate independent resources, which originally I was doing Seminole Heights, but I'm like, well, they share this. They share the roadway. They share the stops. So I wanted to include information on that to really see it as a community and not section it off just because of neighborhood boundaries. So future projects incorporate photography into stages of health and urban planning projects. Like I said before, self-rated health of residents prior to and post-construction. Introduce the method into public involvement, communication with various agencies. Also, being able to talk about it more with media, which, of course, with what we need to do, really expose it, really show, you know, these are some real issues happening. What's the best way to show it? Pictures. Why not? And then also, like I mentioned before, creating livability route maps at transit stations or using transit stops for social other marketing campaigns. And these are just a few of the books, agencies, resources that I used for my research in this project, and I have some packets on the back table of this if you're interested. So thank you.
Thank Thank you, Jillian. We're talking a lot about health impact assessment and livable communities in public health, and so it's really wonderful to be able to see pictures of a lot of the concepts that we're talking about in public health. So with that, I want to give a round of applause to all of our panelists. They did wonderful work. They rose to the top of all of the applicants that we had for this photojournalism project, and we're really thrilled about the way things worked out. So we do have some time. I think we have about a half hour left for questions for all of our panelists. So some for Jillian and as well for our other two panelists. Back here.
Did this section or do any of you all have any resources, I think, same similar question was asked earlier, for those first embarking on photojournalism? I mean, we're planning a project to look at social equity and health disparity issues using photojournalism, and your comment about getting community involvement is where we want to go. But tying that to the qualitative analysis and the survey and all that, do you have any good training manuals or research reference articles that you use to kind of pull it all together?
I will let them respond, but I will say I would like to post their presentations and also maybe get a list from you guys of resources, good resources that you used, and post it up on our section website, which is www.chppd.org, and I'll get these posted up hopefully in the next month. So just a little FYI, but I'll let you guys respond about what were some excellent resources.
Can you repeat the website again?
Yes, www.chppd. That's what happens when you have a really long section name, is that you have a really long acronym, .org. And actually, that's a good way to get you guys to our section website, too. I'll let you guys respond.
So I don't have any manuals, and I didn't really draw on manuals. I did a lot of reading of the literature that had used Photo Voice. Uh-huh. And it's a pretty rich literature. There are a lot of projects. And so that was extremely useful. And I guess in terms of sharing things, I mean, again, I would be happy to share my IRB materials or other things that would be of use, interview guides, anything like that.
There's a lot of I think there's a few articles based from Hopkins, I believe, on visual epidemiology. So if you search through that, it's basically incorporating health into photography in different stages of interventions and diagnosis.
There was a recent review that came out. That reviewed photojournal work for health. So that's a good place to start to look at, to try to find other programs you might want to model off of.
I think that was in the most recent CBPR textbook of Nina Wallerstein and Mary Minkler. I think, yeah. I think it was in the most recent CBPR textbook written by Meredith Minkler and Nina Wallerstein. I'm pretty sure that's where that chapter was.
And it's also in the form of a journal article, mm-hmm. too. So if you Google, you know, Meredith Minkler and Photo Voice.
And Photo Voice, do they still have a website?
Carolyn Wang's original website kind of
went away.
Down,
yeah,
for a while.
But they did have very, very good toolkits on that website. So I bet you could find those somewhere if you do a good Google search. In the back? And do you know any of their names or the project name that we could Google?
I just can't think of it off the top of my head.
Okay.
I can certainly give it to you guys.
Okay, great.
I think it might be like photovoice.com or something really general.
Yeah.
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 One's.org and one's.com. One of them.
Yeah. Right here.
For Jillian, I know that with a lot of built environment projects, getting the county or the city or, you know, the right people involved is really important. Sometimes. Do you have any suggestions for how you could use your project or how other people can use this type of photo research to help that process?
I suggest working with the Metropolitan Planning Organization of wherever you're going to, whatever area you're in. In all honesty, they have nothing to do. They have like a couple reports to do a year. So they get all jazz hands about like getting something interesting to do. So if you link it with an NPO, they like to show off. So if you like give it, like, I'm doing a really cool photo project, I want to work with you, I want to work with the community, they'll get all crazy about it. So honestly, they want something to show off to the state. That's my official answer.
Yeah.
I work with a group of youth in Greensboro, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. We did a photo voice project this past year that we incorporated the 2008 Youth Voice Behavior Survey data in.
Oh, great.
And I think our stance was really that if you're going to do photo voice, it should be a policy project, not an art project. Mm-hmm. And so all of the pictures that the youth took tied in local statistics, and then we were able to, that's why I kind of asked what you did with the pictures, because afterwards we were able to go to city council, county commissioners, mm-hmm. and work towards policy changes within the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and pictures are so compelling when you go to decision makers, and it helps too when it's matched with data as well, so you can kind of, you know, pick and choose the type of, you know, compelling piece of information for different audiences. In the back?
Yeah, my question is related to that comment, which is your thoughts about connecting photo voice to other kinds of participatory research tools. And we also did a youth photo voice project that was part of a community survey where they helped to develop and conduct a physical audit of conditions in city parks in Richmond. Mm-hmm. And then they used the photos they took combined with the survey results mm-hmm. to present to the park commission and other decision makers locally to advocate for better park maintenance and more funding to go towards recreational programs at the park. So I'm wondering if any of y'all have used other tools, research tools, whether I know you mentioned interviews, using interview methods, but I'd just like to hear more about how to integrate photo voice and other research methods.
I can actually just say a quick thing from my own work in New Haven. We trained youth to do asset mapping and gave them cameras, so there was a photo voice component to it. And then they also produced a documentary about how they feel about health in New Haven and what could make New Haven a healthier place. And then we connected that with survey data that we were collecting in the schools and in the neighborhoods in New Haven. So we found that having all of this richness of data from so many different parts of the story has been really important for us for designing interventions in partnership with the community and advocating for some policy change at City Hall. But I want you to let you guys respond as well.
So I don't have a lot of experience with that, but I will say that I think the interviews were really critical to our project. The photos do say a lot on their own, but it's so helpful to be able to hear in someone's own words what they were intending to photograph and how it fits into the larger picture of their experiences. There was something else I was going to say, and I've lost it. So maybe we'll bounce it. I'll try to remember.
Yeah, I mean, we use sort of a group process, which I think works well because, in our case, the women could share ideas with each other. I think in some ways the interview would have been helpful because there's something people probably wanted to talk about one-on-one, but just the resources we had and the way the project worked, we used the photos in conjunction with groups, so I think that's obviously a method that works well with focus groups. In my next project, I'm videoing the groups that talk about the photos, and then in the evaluation component, sort of re-showing the participants those videos of the whole process and asking them to sort of recall that moment and how it felt for other people to look at the photos and then what they did with them. So it's another way to kind of combine.
It's also pretty powerful. A couple of years ago, I was working on a grant where we did something similar to what you mentioned about the parks and recreations, and we had a rating scale. We used a physical activity readiness assessment, I think it's a PARA, I think it was called, and they had a rating scale of 1 to 4, and then you plotted, you know, you went through all of the parks in the area, and then you plotted the numbers and whatever. And then you had the photo, you took photos. So you took photos of incivilities, you know, damage, things like that, and that made it more powerful to say, we have numbers attached to the actual photos. So just, you know, statistical data, backing up, you know, the qualitative. So it's I think it's really an interesting mixed methods approach, especially when you're working with public administration who really don't want to read another tech memo. Mm-hmm. And you can also incorporate, you know, other populations and do 2 birds, 1 stone in a meeting.
I remembered what I was going to say, which was that I know a lot of photo voice projects use the photos to engage in a sort of sorting or grouping or ranking activity, and that's something that we didn't have time for because the renovation project ended, the guys went on to other parts of their lives and the project ended, but I think it would have been really interesting and helpful to have them help me categorize and think through together what the photographs meant. So sort of combining Michelle's process and my process, maybe.
Other questions, comments over here?
I think we need to be careful though about divorcing the aspect of art from the research too, because art, in terms of exhibit, is its emotional experience. It can reach out. I mean, policymakers go to art exhibits, and if it's well orchestrated, I think it can be powerful. So I'm just curious if any of these projects, as an art project or as an exhibition, reached out to the community or the policymakers.
Well, I think that's a good comment because I've been thinking about that in the last few minutes, because with our project, we tried to be really open. I know that historically, Photo Voice projects have been really grounded with this process that leads to policy change, and that's clearly very important, but you know, for us, women hadn't had a lot of opportunities to express themselves, so we were quite open in that this is for you, and some people did take it along that path and got something changed, but for other people, the process was much more internal. Someone who had very bad eyesight just photographed the inside of her house and realized through that process that she was kind of trapped. And I don't think she would have realized that unless she had expressed herself in this way. So I think it's important, you know, to kind of, if it's in the hands of the participants, that they may want to do different things with it. And we didn't really stress any technical aspects of photography in ours, but, you know, I felt like our exhibit was hopefully, we were hoping policy people could see it, but it was also just for them to share what they thought was kind of beautiful about, you know, their lives and wanted other people to know. So.
I mean, research is an art, too, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Anybody else want to comment on that?
The thought I had while you were talking was about there's a thought that maybe the advocacy organization that I was working with will use some of these photos to develop materials to help them talk to policymakers, and I think it really is through that sort of emotional response that they're hoping that will work, so I hope that will come to be.
We still have a few more minutes if there are more comments or questions, or we can allow some time for you to talk individually with our panelists. Anybody else? All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us today, and please take advantage of the experiences of folks here at the panel, and please give them another round of applause.